X-Cast, X-Files, Podwatch, episode 38. Today, we're talking about the season 4 opener, Herrenvolk, along with what's probably the most infamous episode of the X-Files, Home. I'm your host, Sarah Blair, and with me is Clara Cook. Hi, Clara.
Hi, Sarah.
Let's dig into Herrenvolk really quick. I think that I can probably speak for most fans when I say this is not exactly one of the greatest season openers, not totally the most exciting. Like, there's a lot of questions and not a lot of answers. It's kind of just like Chris Carter dangling that carrot out in front of Mulder the whole time. And what do you think about this episode? It aired October 4th, 1996. And it was written by Chris Carter. And then R.W. Goodwin was directing it. And I don't know. Do you think it's their best offering, or could it have been a little bit better?
No, I don't think it's their best offering. I think it's got some big problems wrong with it. And I think I'd probably be more forgiving of the episode if it wasn't an opening season episode.
Yeah.
So that's probably one of the problems. You have high expectations for episodes that open an entire new season. So there are some things I do like about it. I think the locations are great. I think filming the teaser is especially creepy, with the electrician being stung by a bee and then falling and dying on the floor with all these identical boys watching him. I think that the outdoor locations are great. I always like it when the X-Files goes outside into some sort of more rural or pastoral area. I just think it's very exciting, whether they're in Antarctica or whether they're in the woods or whether they're... I suppose in here they're supposed to be in Canada, aren't they?
Yes.
So I like that. I like the idea of there being clones, identical clones, working on agricultural work, like living in these like little houses. I like the idea of there being multiple clones of Samantha. I think that's kind of cool. Mr. X's death is very, very dramatic. It's well shot. The writing, the details of the blood sort of pumping out of his chest are really, really dramatic. I like that the cigarette-smoking man saves Mulder's mother. Spoiler alert, saves Mulder's mother at the end, and how he sort of scrabbles around, struggles to find a reason for saving Tina Mulder, but he can't really find a reason except for the fact that he's obviously in love with her or cares about her. But there's some really bad things. Like, we're no closer to finding out anything about the conspiracy. Every time we get close to finding out something, they have to run. And the bit that really, really annoys me is at the very end, when Mulder turns around to Jeremiah Smith and says, "I want some answers. Tell me some answers." And then the bounty hunter shows up.
Convenient, isn't it? Right.
And the running and the action is fine, but just having it there as a purpose to extend the mystery of the conspiracy is just, I think, silly, really. So there's quite a lot of like delaying of information, unnecessary delaying of information. And halfway through the episode, Mulder makes this decision to just leave Scully and get on the boat with Jeremiah Smith to escape the bounty hunter. And I just don't think he would do that. I don't think he would leave his mother in hospital. He makes a choice to leave his mother in hospital and to leave Scully in danger.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's really aggravating.
Yeah, and when he calls her, he says, "Where are you?" And she's like, "I'm in the car where you left me, you know, all night long, sitting in the car with the bounty hunter." Can you imagine that conversation she must have had with the bounty hunter?
So how about that Mulder, man? You know, right? Like, what would you talk about? Did they just sit there all night with a gun on her and just hang out?
I mean, I guess the bounty hunter might be pretty good at being silent, but at some point somebody's going to be like, "Can we turn the radio on?" Or, you know, I mean, someone's going to talk. They're going to talk to each other. Yeah. And I mean, how long can you sit there with a gun trained to the back of your head without basically freaking out?
Poor Scully.
I mean, when you start screaming and crying and be like, "Just shoot me already, I can't take it anymore."
Yeah, and when Mulder takes off in that boat, I was watching, and she calls out for him a few times. He doesn't even look back.
Yeah.
He's not like, "Hey, I'm okay," or like nothing. He's just like, "Whatever, Scully."
I think he probably thinks that he's hurt the bounty hunter, he's killed him or whatever. But they can't be sure of that. And even so, even if you've done that, you're leaving your partner in the dark in the middle of nowhere. Like,
right?
I mean, Scully could take care of herself, but still, you know, I mean,
yeah,
I don't think it's very fair.
Totally. I'll see the beginning in the credits says everything dies, so that's noteworthy, I think. I mean, how about in this episode, like, do you think the credits are right, or do you think Marita was right? Because Chris Carter said, you know, not everything dies on the X-Files. Not everyone dies on the X-Files. So what do you think about the note there and how that plays into the rest of the show, that episode and the rest of the show?
Well, Marita Korovoubius is offering him hope at the end, isn't she, by saying not everything dies. I mean, if you're talking about the evidence, like a metaphorical kind of dying, like, does everything get destroyed? Like, hope, the evidence of the conspiracy, any sort of desire or will to expose the truth, then it's right, actually. Not everything, she's right, not everything does die, because Mulder isn't completely and utterly destroyed by this episode. I mean, obviously, by the end of it, he's very low, and he's in a low position, a low place. But he will come back, and he will go forward to seek the truth and to battle the conspiracy and try and expose it. But if you're talking about, like, literally things dying, well, yeah, pretty much everything does die. Because, well, there's the obvious fact that people do die. But also, like, he never finds his sister. She's dead, or she's been dead the entire time, you know? I mean, he doesn't know this till, like, season 7. But she has been dead the entire time. And all these copies of his sister that he's seeing or meeting are exactly that. They're just copies. They're not the real person. Jeremiah Smith himself is, like, I mean, he seems like an individual in this episode, but I suppose we're supposed to think that he's one of many types of shape-shifting aliens, right? So he's also going to die.
X dies,
yeah. I mean, Deep Throat's dead by this point. Like, none of them are going to come back. I sort of feel like they weren't thinking about it that deeply when they wrote it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't think Chris Carter was probably thinking past a whole lot there.
The ideas in this episode are great. The ideas of bee husbandry, the ideas of smallpox. I think the ideas of the clones are good as well. But there's certain problems, like the fact that Jeremiah Smith would take Mulder all the way out there. I mean, they had the whole car journey and 20 miles to walk, and he didn't discuss the conspiracy once. What did they talk about then?
So I wonder how Scully's doing with that bounty hunter.
Yeah,
but it was interesting because this is the first time we get the bees introduced, right? And then they come back in a big way in the movie. And, you know, so that was a pretty cool setup because I totally didn't see any of that coming. But as much, like, I know Mulder put on all that gasoline and everything, but there were, like, 100 bajillion bees in that place. I'm surprised he didn't get stung once. And then you've got that one tiny little bee that comes on Scully's collar all the way across the entire country and stings her just the right moment.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that one little bee that stings the electrician in the beginning of this episode and leads to this huge reaction in which or even the bounty hunter getting stung by, like, all those bees and his face swelling up. I think there's an ironic thing at the end of this episode about how Mulder has been running from the bounty hunter the entire episode, but the bounty hunter is actually the one that ends up saving his mother.
Exactly, yeah.
Which I thought was quite ironic, really. And when the bounty hunter saves Tina, he doesn't look that threatening. He's got a sort of soft look to his face.
Yeah.
Which makes you think, because he's been such an aggressive, but also kind of faceless villain, like, you don't really know who he is, what he's thinking. He's a bit like the Terminator or something, you know, kind of coming for you. But actually, I thought it would have been nice to have slightly more insight into the bounty hunters and who they are and why they do what they do.
Yeah. Well, that's why episodes like The Musings of a Cigarette Smoking Man are so great, I think, because you get that insight into Spender, I guess that's what his name is. So, yeah, I think that would be interesting to get his point of view, the bounty hunter. I like that he asks the cigarette smoking man, you know, why should I do this? Why should I save her? And obviously, it's because Cigarette Smoking Man is in love with her, because that's his one true love, but it didn't work out for him and for her. So he says that if she dies, that Mulder's going to have nothing left to lose. But at this point, he still thinks Samantha's alive, or he still doesn't know what happened to her, and he's not going to find out for a while. So he still has that to hang on to.
And Scully.
You know, and Scully, exactly.
Yeah. And no, I think it's just an excuse. Like, he does kind of struggle. Yeah. He kind of, like, struggles a little bit to come up with it, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. I think it's just an excuse. Like, I think this is quite a self-serving thing. Like, yeah, I think he's saving Tina because he loves her. I don't think he's doing it.
Absolutely. And that one little half split second where he's holding her hand, that made me, like, all swoony. Because, I mean, I know he's, like, a totally bad guy and everything, but I'm all for love where anybody can find it. I'm happy to champion love where...
Yeah, that's the only other thing I would say in this episode, which is, yet again, the last thing I would say is that it reiterates how awful Mulder is as a neighbor to have. Literally, how many people die in the hallway outside his apartment, or in his apartment, or in the apartment next to his apartment? I mean, how many weird things go on? How many batshit crazy things go on? You would move pretty quick.
I'm guessing his neighbors across the hall don't last very long. But yeah. Oh, also, I just want to mention real quick how much I love Laurie Holden, who plays Marita Covarrubias, because she's one of my favorite characters in the show, and I just really, really wish that she had been in it a little bit more. I love her and Krycek both. But yeah, and we get to meet her in this episode. So I love how creepy she is and just how calm, cool, and collected she is all the time. And, you know, I really like her character a lot. So I'm glad we got to meet her in this episode. It kind of makes the whole rest of it worth it, just to meet her. Holm, like, no offense, Herrenvolk, but Holm, I feel like, really kickstarts the season with a bang. This episode originally aired October 11th in 96, and we had the trifecta. Morgan and Wong writing, with Kim Manners directing. Like, does it really get much better than that in the X-Files world? What did you think when you... Did you see this episode when it originally aired on television, or were you...
I did.
After? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. And actually, this episode terrified me as a teenager.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a big horror fan, and I didn't watch, as a teenager, I didn't watch, like, you know, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, or Deliverance, or Night of the Walking Dead, or any of the films, or I think that probably sort of influenced this episode. I would say one of my early introductions to horror. The teaser itself is awful. I mean, awful in a good way. It just gets worse from there, you know? I mean, the violence in the episode is horrible, but really well used. It's witty, it's funny.
I mean, it's almost the perfect X-Files episode, really, because you've got a little bit of everything, and it's done so well.
The music in the episode is really expertly used, you know, the sort of old sort of crooning song.
Johnny Mathis, yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Every time I watch this episode, I get that song in my head for days, and it just creeps me out.
I mean, it's just so well used. And I think the murder of the sheriff and his wife is, like, one of the most horrific murders in the entire series of The X-Files.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's just so brutal. It's really caveman-like, you know. I mean, the killing of with the clubs. It's very animalistic. But there's little touches and details in the episode that are there, like Mulder and Scully talking about what it would be like to be parents, which is really sad, actually. It sort of echoes into the future of what it's going to be, of Scully's struggles to conceive a child. And, of course, we don't know that when we're first watching the episode, but looking back on it now, I'm like, oh, you know, it's just quite sad.
Yeah.
And then also even just the shot of him trying to get, I think, a baseball game on television while she's talking on the phone, and in the background you can see him playing with the TV aerial.
And you get that little clip of, like, the nature show and how they're like, notice the animals circle in, and it's like total foreshadowing.
And, like, the parallels of Mrs. Peacock underneath the bed and the sheriff's wife underneath the bed, and both women are equally terrified. And I mean, of when they're confronted, I mean, the sheriff's wife is, you know, going to be killed, and Mrs. Peacock is terrified because Mulder and Scully are going to disrupt her way of life. And mm-hmm. I actually think it's interesting as well that the actual... I didn't notice this the first time I watched it. I thought the peacocks were just awful, like inbred, mm-hmm. creepy people. But I realised that the people to disrupt the balance between the community of the town and the peacocks are actually Mulder and Scully.
Yeah, like Mulder and Scully kind of plow into this town and bring the modern world with them and leave everything in a complete and utter mess. So you've got all these murders in this town. The peacocks are heading off to go move somewhere else, and Mulder and Scully go back to their life, and the town is just sort of left to pick up the pieces, literally.
And it's sort of like a twisted, like, look on small town America, you know, it's these safe towns and these communities, and or this idealized view, I suppose, of small town America, and also like the nuclear American nuclear family, which I think is quite good. So it kind of sort of, I don't know, maybe twists something that would be very comfortable and safe and turns it into something very scary and unnatural. So I just think they do it really well here. There also seems to be a bit of anger, and I didn't know whether that's because the writers themselves didn't anticipate coming back to write for the X-Files, because didn't they leave and go and try and start their own show?
I can't remember at what point that happened, but yeah.
Yeah, and so now they're back writing the X-Files, and there seems to be a level of anger, at least irritation, and I think it comes out. Mulder and Scully seem, I don't know, kind of weary and flippant when they go and they investigate the sheriff's murder. You know, Mulder's like, oh, it looks like his head's been bashed in or whatever he says. They also are kind of, I don't know, they're sort of flippant a little bit about the death of a baby.
Yeah, I think Mulder feels a little bit more restless in his portrayal than... I think Scully is definitely a little more affected by the baby than Mulder is, and maybe he's sort of just... The impression that I got was that he was sort of anxious to be out in the country, and, you know, he prefers the city, and, like, I mean, I know he says, like, if I had my choice, this is what I would want, but let's be honest, if he was out there for too long, like, really? I don't know.
What's the word? They seem to be slightly overly calm about the sheriff's murder, and the person who seems to be the most shook up is the deputy, which I assume would be because he knows the sheriff, he's worked with him for a long time. But even when the deputy dies, they're a little bit like, oh well, too bad, you know. And I'm not criticizing that. I think the writers did that deliberately. Mm-hmm. I think they did it deliberately because of the fact that they're sort of, I don't know, well, they're sort of turning a slightly critical eye on the show itself.
Yeah, and the fact that they sort of like make fun of the small town thing, because I like how they acknowledge. You know, Scully is like, it's like Mayberry, and then the sheriff walks up, and his name's Andy Taylor, and instead of, like, treating it as normal, Mulder's like, wait, what? Seriously? Like, for real? and then he goes, and they meet the deputy, and he's like, his name's Barney. He's like, Fife? No, Passer. And you can tell he's gotten this, like, 100 times before, because he's so irritated. And those two moments play so well in with this very dark situation. I mean, you've got a baby who is buried alive. Like, what is more evil and awful and horrible? Oh, wait. It has, like, a bajillion birth defects. They just pile on all... Like, every gruesome thing you can think of is piled on in this episode. But then the humor is woven throughout.
But the peacocks grieve over the death of that baby. Mm-hmm. They grieve over the death of that baby, and they rush to the defense of their mother. And, you know, they rush to the defense of, like, I guess, their pigs, you know, I mean, like, their property. They don't actually threaten or hurt anyone until Mulder and Scully start investigating them. I'm not saying I'm sympathetic to them, but I feel there is that element that's written into it, that Mulder and Scully are encroaching on someone else's territory. They are invading someone else's space. And you very much see that when they talk to Mrs. Peacock, they talk to the mother.
Well, you can tell, like, how removed they are from all society and from all of everything. Because, I mean, other than they've got all those newspapers stacked up and everything. But, you know, she calls it the War of Northern Aggression, which is extremely antiquated. Like, they're so far removed from... just everything. I mean, it's hard to say that they're ignorant, because I think it's just that they don't have the outside influence. Like, they don't have modern technology, they don't have internet, they don't have anything. this small town in Pennsylvania is almost like a metaphor for the entire globe, because everything was changing so quickly. And going back to look at it now is like, oh yeah, you can't go home again. No, nothing is going to be like that again.
Yeah, I mean, the sheriff sort of says that, doesn't he? The sheriff sort of says, like, I know the world's going to change. And when I saw this baby, I knew that this was the end of, like, this innocent period in my town and in my life. And he's right. Like, the world is changing and it's coming to his town, and his town will have to change and adapt. And you sort of get the feeling at the end when the peacocks leave to find some other place to live. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Miss Peacock says, oh, we'll start a new family. I do wonder, you know, where can they go where they'll be able to have the same sort of situation where they'll be so isolated and so left alone? It's not really that possible. And so, you know, at some point they're going to end up probably in the future end up clashing at some point with law enforcement again, and probably end up clashing with the authorities and other people, because the world does become more global, it becomes more connected in a way that kind of makes things more crowded. So it's harder to just kind of disappear into an anonymity.
Yeah, so what are a couple of your... I always call this episode the best hair episode. Because Mulder... Like, every time I notice Mulder and Scully's hair, it's completely impeccable and it's perfect. I just love their hair in this episode. I know that's petty compared to, you know, the greatly insightful thing that you were just talking about.
No, you're right though, the hair doesn't get messed up despite the fact they're like pushing pigs around and stuff like that, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and one of my favorite lines that I quote all the time when I get like really hungry is I always like to quote Mrs. Peacock when she says, I'm hungry.
I really like the moment where Mulder picks up the newspaper that says Elvis is dead.
Yeah, and he pouts.
I think that's really funny. Yeah. I also like the fact that Scully quotes from Dick Kingsmith, the sheep pig, you know, babe.
Babe, yeah.
Which is bar ram you, you know. Although she says it wrong. She says it like something else, but yeah, it's bar ram you. And I thought that was quite funny. It's a good episode, partly because Mulder and Scully do sort of joke with each other as well.
Yeah.
Even though at times I was like, "Are you really gonna joke while there's this dead guy here? Are you really gonna joke about that?" But I think that's the writers. I think the writers have got a morbid sense of humor, and so they kind of inject that into the episode. So it's hard to think of another episode where the deaths are so horrific and Mulder and Scully are so flippant about it. But I think that's deliberate. I think they must have done that deliberately. So. But yeah, it's just a great episode. The music, the atmosphere, the location. I like how you never see the peacocks' faces fully, see their faces. They're always sort of shrouded in darkness. There's like this suggestion of deformity, but no, like,
well, it's,
you know.
Sort of, yeah, and then also, until you get to the mother and everything, but even then it's kind of just with the flashlights and in the dark, it's like that feeling of the outside looking in on this life, and they use the long lenses, and you know, it's like being so far away and so far removed from this type of lifestyle, but at the same time it's kind of like almost the world is spying and encroaching on these people, and so that's really fascinating too, I think.
And Scully, it's nice to see Scully so concerned about the idea that a woman might be held captive in the peacock's house, and how she's concerned about the health of the woman after giving birth. And she's just, you know, like, it's nice to see that she's very concerned about somebody's safety.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for us. Come find us on Twitter at @X_cast and let us know your thoughts about the peacocks and all of the fun stuff in this episode on our our Facebook group, The X-Files Basement, The X-Cast Podcast Fan Group. And tomorrow, coming up, Andrew and Amy will be talking about Teleco and a great episode of Rua. Thanks for joining us, and until tomorrow, trust no one.